the user can more easily understand and learn the tool, but you still need to learn the tool and adapt how you work to make it work with that tool.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of Bark, and I have two guests today. First is Rishi Grover, co-founder of Venna, and Andrew Stanbridge, who is the VP of product there. And we will talk about the super interesting topic of consumerization of AI. We'll explain what that actually is and why it is important. What's going on with AI in enterprises in general, but in Office of Finance applications in specific. We'll talk about how consumerization affects the expectations of users, but also the way how software is being delivered here. And we will understand better what challenges companies need to address in general when addressing AI, but also the opportunities that are in here. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Andrew. Hi, Richie.
Hello, Carsten. Good to be with you today.
Hi, Carsten. Great to see you.
Yeah, great to have you on my podcast today. And we chose a very interesting topic, and let's dive directly into it. It's consumerization of AI. Difficult word. I would expect not every listener will actually understand or know about what it is. So let me ask you first, what is consumerization?
Yeah, I typically, in the context of enterprise, you know, I typically look at consumerization as any type of, often technologies that, have taken a lot of inspiration from consumer software, whether that's ease of use, accessibility, high competitiveness, and different vendors bringing together different technologies and competing at a high level to ultimately make a certain piece of technology or type of software much more cost effective, affordable for enterprise, easier to adopt, easier to implement. And we're certainly seeing that, with artificial intelligence in the last even 3 to 4 years, but really picked up in the last, I would say, 24 months or so. A lot of the topics I just mentioned are really transpiring with different types of AI across the enterprise.
Yeah. And if we look at, what AI technology is, it really is, a science that, makes machines think like humans. So really it's a broad set of technologies that can determine patterns in data, make predictions. But, AI technology, machine learning, it's not a new technology. It's been around for a very long time. So to Andrew's point, kind of the change of industry and expectations on the enterprise level, it's now taking this, technology that's been maturing for a very long time, making very practical applications out of it. And then that layer on top of just making it so easy to use as if it was a consumer application in the enterprise space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And would you also say that Gen AI really brought this to the attention of, let's say, the consumer, so to anyone? Because I would say before it was still like a specialist job. I mean, the data scientist was not someone that was like had the everyday education, but was also quite specially educated. But now Gen AI brought the big change, didn't it?
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, to Rishi's point, different types of AI have been around for a long time. I mean, especially in the Office of Finance. I mean, machine learning has certainly been a more, to do things like predictive forecasting, like that's been around for several years. And even if you really want to go deep into data science, it's been around for quite a long time. But generative AI, to your point, Carson, has been, I think the epitome of this example of consumerization, right? Where quite literally it exploded as a consumer tool with ChatGPT. I mean, that's really where it, they weren't the first large language model, but they were the first to really crack the nut on, pretty much everyone started using ChatGPT. I think they set some pretty wild records for fastest growing active users and all that kind of stuff. And so, I think that was really that kind of like explosive transition that really, if you want to pick a milestone of some kind, that really started the consumerization of generative AI, at least, and how it started to make its way into the enterprise, for sure.
Yeah, it is interesting because OpenAI, ChatGPT, the creation of large language models has set the bar now, right, in terms of usability. Because I think of, you know, software before this concept, and you create user-friendly software. But that really means a user can more easily understand and learn the tool, but you still need to learn the tool and adapt how you work to make it work with that tool, albeit it's more user-friendly. Where when you look at large language models and the ChatGPTs of the world, is it almost learns you. Like, that's the most natural way for me to work, right? I ask a question in my human language, right? So it's learning me, and that is the utopia of the most user-friendly type of application. So ChatGPT really did kind of set that bar in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? For in preparation of this podcast, I looked up when I last talked about consumerization of BI, because that was actually a trend. And I found a presentation from 2012. And what I was describing there, what was happening, I think was very similar. So this was the first time we could see that people had a very powerful software for their private use, and they would then basically start to say, this is my requirement also for my business software. And here we were talking about more fundamental things like, for example, ease of use. Yeah, at that time, you would still often have very complicated software solutions, legacy systems and the like. And then people would use something like Google. Yeah, just one line, super easy. And then they would ask the hard questions. It's like, okay, Google is now looking in a corpus of information of maybe several million pages, and it takes like 0.5 seconds. And my BI tool takes 30 seconds to look in a very small space of structured data even. Why? Yeah? And typically you didn't have a good answer because you could do it, but you had the wrong technology. So I think that was for me the first wave of consumerization. Yeah, when we generally were looking at IT applications and how they should be used. And I think, Richie, you made a good point. Yeah, so ease of use is the starting point where people will say, okay, I can use this now in private life. Mm-hmm. Why can't I use it in a business scenario? Mm-hmm. And let's transfer this now to business applications. And you are obviously in a specific space. And what do you see specifically now happening in, let's say, the Office of Finance or in CPM software?
Yeah, solutions? So Office of Finance, if I kind of address that, there's just so many applications or potential applications and some practical ones that are in place today that are evolving, becoming better and what have you. And the way I like to categorize those is into three main categories for the Office of Finance. The first is all things AI-powered visualizations. The second is all things predictive forecasting, which is, as Andrew mentioned, has been there for quite some time, but is evolving, becoming easier to use, becoming more sophisticated. And the third is what we're talking about here, all things Gen AI. And when I look at each of those, you know, if I look at AI-powered visualizations, that really gets down to just getting, you know, insights into my data where the software, like if you look at BI software, as we're talking about, if you look at Power BI as an example, they're adding so much more AI functionality in there. It's behind the scenes. Like, there's some widgets or objects that are AI powered, some that are not. As an end user, it doesn't matter to me if it is or isn't, but is it addressing what I'm looking for and providing me with insights into that data? But there are a lot of things like, you know, key influencers within Power BI or smart narratives. Anomaly detection has predictive forecasting models in there as well. So there's, you know, there's a lot of investment in the BI techs of the world of creating AI-powered visualizations that are run by underlying machine learning models and things like that. The same with predictive forecasting. So, you know, predictive forecasting helping me become more accurate in my forecasting process over time, but also becoming a lot more efficient in my planning process, right? So to create, you know, a first draft of my plan very quickly, then I can go into there and fine-tune the numbers and what have you. But you know, when you look at even Microsoft Excel, you know, lots of companies are doing their planning process in Microsoft Excel. Within Excel, there are a lot of great machine learning formulas and methodologies to do that predictive forecasting. You know, looking at historical data, perhaps intersecting that with some third-party external data, and using functions like the forecast formula or the ETS formula within Excel. And Python, you know, Python is probably one of the most popular languages to use for machine learning. Again, leveraging the historical data sets to produce forecasts. And now Microsoft has fully embedded Python into Excel. So I think that's another path of making it more consumable. Like Python, still you do need to code things and whatnot, but now using Gen AI within Excel integrated with Python, you can just write out what you want it to do and it produces Python code for you. So that's just another evolution of this technology, making it more consumerized. And then finally, things, Gen AI, right? That takes structured data, takes unstructured data and creates content. And where you can use natural language through prompts, a lot like the Google kind of analogy there, and just ask a question and it queries a set of data and gives you information back. And vendors out there are taking this Gen AI technology and fine tuning it specifically for finance activities. So for example, you know, during the month end close, for business stakeholders to be able to leverage Gen AI technology to ask questions about their financials, about their variances, as opposed to, you know, emailing or messaging their finance team to get those answers back, which can take a lot of time, a lot of back and forth. So Gen AI really helps a lot with efficiency and productivity. So those are the three main categories I see it specifically in the context of finance. So AI powered visualizations, predictive forecasting, and now Gen AI.
The building on Rishi's three kind of themes of how AI is impacting finance, I think just to double down on the third one, you know, it being also the newest, I think one of the things that's really interesting that we're exploring a lot is the impact that generative AI can have, not just directly in the Office of Finance, but also how folks in the Office of Finance can become more productive by better enabling the rest of their business. When we talk to a lot of companies and users of products like Venna, you know, ultimately, you know, the harsh reality is finance is looked at as a cost center, right? And so the more productive a finance team can be at serving larger and larger audiences within the business, you know, the more successful they're going to be. And when you look at how, you know, FP&A teams, for example, are spending their time, it's almost it's significantly in service of a line of business, right? And so the more that those lines of business can be enabled with technology that allows them to make really quick decisions based off of insights related to the budget or how their business is performing at month end, et cetera, the more productive the finance team can be at focusing on more strategic analysis, partnering with the CFO, with the office of the CEO, et cetera. And I think generative AI unlocks some really interesting capabilities that allow the non-finance teams to be more enabled with the data and the insights from the financials, the budget, the actuals, et cetera, without having to always come back to the core finance team to get that insight, get those insights. Because what we often forget is a lot of folks outside of finance aren't comfortable necessarily navigating their business's financials. And so I think generative AI opens up a more natural conversational way for not so comfortable folks in sitting in the financials can get the insights, the answers they're looking for in a very natural human interface, kind of like what Rishi mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, that I think is also a good example for consumerization, yeah? Being way more accessible with a natural language. How do you see that in terms of usability? I mean, I see quite different positions on this. Yeah, some say this is the future. Yeah, in the future, we will only talk to the machine. And others say, hey, this is kind of complicated. If I just want to see a dashboard, for example, yeah, I just want to see it. I don't want to talk to anyone. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good discussion. I mean, I think it's something as large and disruptive as this, I don't think there's going to be one silver bullet that ends up dominating everything. I think, you know, for example, some people are always going to be to the opposite of what I just said. Some people are just always going to be comfortable looking at a spreadsheet of data, right? Uh-huh. So I think that's okay. I think especially in these days of AI, I mean, you got to remember, you know, the speed at which generative AI in particular is improving is, you know, unprecedented in comparative technologies and certainly in our lifetime. And so we're still in the very early days. And so I think it will continue to get more and more intelligent. And, you know, assuming costs also keep halving at the rate that they are, it will become more and more utilized in both consumers and enterprise world. But I think you'll always still have a little bit of, you know, Rishi and I were laughing about this. Our head of legal has a great analogy for AI. And I don't have a crystal ball, so maybe this changes. But certainly today, and certainly in enterprise, you know, we were joking about generative AI almost being like the smartest intern you have that works 24 hours a day and knows everything on the internet, right? And what's important about that analogy is you wouldn't let the intern make key decisions in your business, but they're excellent at providing you with different sets of data and potential options or potential decisions so that a human ultimately still makes that decision, right? And I think that is an important, that's something we preach a lot with our own customers and our own AI products. And I think that plays a factor in a little bit of what you're talking about, where, you know, it's great to get the input from a large language model, but you ultimately still want to see the data and make sure that you're making an accurate decision. And of course, the severity of that goes up based off of the impact of the decision that you're making, right? But I think you'll all, especially in enterprise, where, you know, the last thing you want is this fear of like, you know, I'm going to rely on an AI model to make a decision and I'd lose my job because it was the wrong thing or it was based on inaccurate data, whatever, right? So I think there's always going to be, especially in this early era of generative AI, an important reminder to always make sure you're looking at the raw data to some extent and using generative AI to just help accelerate getting to that accurate based decision.
Yeah. Hey, I want to invite you to the Bark Finance and Controlling Summit. This will be a unique opportunity to meet many experts, not only from Bark talking about market trends and their observations on the market, but also other experts like Nicolas Boucher. He's a really deep down expert in AI and finance, or Professor Meyer, long-term capacity on digital finance. Of course, we have the latest technology present, so you can take a look what's new in the software field. But we also have many vendors, users talking about their experiences in using software, what worked, what didn't. I'm looking forward to hear, for example, from Zalando or ENBV. This is a great opportunity to connect with experts, with vendors, but also with each other in the finance and controlling community. This year, we focus on two main topics. One is planning and reporting, and the other is ESG reporting. This all happens on the 13th and 14th of May in Frankfurt. I'm looking forward to seeing you there. Now, you already mentioned a few challenges. Let's talk about the challenges you're observing with using AI, but also on the opposite. Yeah, how can I be successful? Obviously, one way is to mitigate the risk and look at the challenges, but also what are success factors? So maybe let's take a look at both of these things that are more practical in implementing AI.
I can jump in first, Rishi. I think at least what I'm seeing a lot of is one of the first challenges that's pretty fundamental and is a key difference between, you know, personal life and enterprise is organizational maturity or readiness to adopt AI. I still see a lot of organizations that are either at the level of, you know, just you are not to use generative AI at work, right? Or they have no, that is their policy, or they don't have a policy yet. And there's just this, at the individual contributor level, there's like just a bit of a fear mongering of, well, there's no guidelines or policy at my organization. And so I'm going to be more risk adverse and just not use these tools. So I think one of the most fundamental challenges in the enterprise right now is just that organizational plan for how to leverage, in particular, generative AI. I think that's definitely one of the top challenges I see.
And also, you know, when we look at Gen AI solutions specific for enterprise, you know, specific for a certain part of the organization for a specific use case, whether you're building it internally or you're selecting an external vendor that has, you know, the Gen AI technology or whatever it might be to address that, to address that use case, I think it's very important that there is this change of mindset that, you know, it's very geared to the quality of the output. Exactly as Andrew mentioned, can I rely on the data, but the quality of the output and also the security, as well. So, you know, when we look at the data quality, it's just, you know, with any application, but I would say especially for now, AI technology is to ensure that there's, you know, the accountability of the data, the quality of the data ownership that you're constantly reviewing, you know, the data that I'm feeding into the AI model, is it accurate? And having that cadence and that governance and that process to ensure the quality of the data that's feeding the AI model. I think that's super important when we get into the world of AI. Obviously security, you know, whatever legal security that we need to adhere to based upon my geography, based upon my industry, whatever compliance I need to adhere to, you know, especially now with AI technology, if you're selecting a vendor, to do, you know, pretty good due diligence to ensure the location of that data. Is it, it'd be exposed to the public internet, but you want the security of that data, ideally to be, you know, specifically just for your organization, not shared elsewhere. And to Andrew's point, you know, the accountability of that data. AI is super powerful, but it does not eliminate the need for human wisdom, right? To overlook the output of it, but also making sure that you can fine-tune your AI model so it becomes more accurate over time. And you have the ability and the control to do that and not having to rely on data scientists and what have you. So I think those are also three other critical areas to ensure the success of an AI deployment, again, whether you build it internally, which a lot of companies are doing, or selecting external vendors.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that's very good recommendations. And maybe to add one, especially in finance organizations, we see a lot of focus in a way on explainability. Yeah, so that you can really start to understand how, like, for example, a forecast is being made. And I think in the end, it's all about trust.
Yeah, transparency, and exactly right. 100% agree. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned all these advancements. Yeah, you mentioned ChatGPT and Copilot and things that are going on. Now, where's your place in all this? Are you afraid that these tools will more and more replace what you can offer? I mean, obviously not, but still, I mean, something is going on. What's your strategy around it? Yeah, do you embrace it? Do you what do you do?
Yeah, I would say fully embrace. At Venna, we are very excited about this technology. We have taken a approach where we want to embrace the best of breed AI technology out there, and not, you know, create our own proprietary AI technology. Like, to Andrew's point, is this is evolving so quickly. And as amazing as it is today, where it's going to be in 6 months, 1 year, 3 years is just going to be remarkable. So we're super excited about that. And at Venna, we provide an FP&A solution that's very Microsoft-centric in terms of Excel, Power BI within our platform. So what we have done is we have really partnered with Microsoft to integrate their Azure OpenAI, their AI services into the Venna platform. So we want to integrate with that and leverage the best of breed, all the development that's happening there. But what we do is we take that, we productize it, and we fine-tune it specifically for the Office of Finance. So our first kind of release and our journey into that was the creation of Venna Copilot, where Venna Copilot really kind of combines in the Venna platform the Venna data model, which we call Venna Cubeflex, which houses our customers, their planning data, budget data, their actual data from source systems or operational data from source systems, and how we integrate that with Microsoft's AI services, which is through Azure OpenAI, such that you can do, you know, Gen AI on top of that underlying Venna data. So using prompts, using natural language to ask questions about the data. And it could be as simple as, hey, what is my financials for this month? Or give me a specific data point. But I'm just quickly asking it. I'm getting information back. I'm getting reports back. But then it gets into, you know, really understanding variances of my data. Why do I have a high variance in this quarter for this business unit? And it going through all the data, using different agents, different financial agents to analyze that data and give me insights back and give me reports back. And all the way getting into, you know, understanding trends in my data, insights in my data. So that's really our first step there before we get into things like asset generation, you know, build me a report that does this. Or to your point, Karsten, a lot of people just want to see a dashboard. Can I type in, hey, build me a dashboard that looks at this data? And now gives me a visual dashboard that I can just naturally slice and dice and analyze. And really the path here and what our objectives are is to make teams much more efficient. Again, as I kind of mentioned before, there's always so much back and forth between business unit leaders and the Office of Finance to help understand my financials, help understand why I have certain variances. And that's just highly unproductive. You have very smart people doing very manual tasks that should be focusing on strategic value add activity. We believe our approach with Venna Copilot and Gen AI will just make teams much more efficient so they can be much more strategic in the work that they do day to day.
All right, very good. You mentioned agents, and obviously that's the big topic everyone talks about. Maybe you could explain for us first, yeah, what do you mean with that? Or what would you say, where is the application of, it's called agentic AI or agents, especially in the Office of Finance?
Yeah, I mean, I probably am some more super expert is going to probably disagree with me here. I mean, the way that I sort of look at agents a little bit is, in a way, they're sort of like purpose-built apps on large language models. And that's not necessarily the most, you know, technically scientific description of them, but that's sort of how at least I've started using them and how we're also developing a little bit of that on our end. As an example, Rish and I have both been building our own at Venna. We've been building our own agents, on Microsoft 365 Copilot, that are really, you know, with 365 Copilot, they're specific, you know, almost like chat applications that are really good at a very specific data, like a set of use cases targeting a very specific set of data. So we're using them internally within Venna in that sense. I think on, when it comes to how we've started integrating agents into our platform, you know, one of the things that's interesting is, well, agents are all the buzz right now. At the same time, you know, at least I've started to see a little bit of, almost like, well, if you've got 30 agents, it almost starts to, you lose some of that productivity gain because I'm now not sure which agent to sort of use. Mm-hmm. And so the way that we've been looking at the use of agents at Venna is, you know, we have our generative AI product, Venna Copilot. And behind the scenes, we are developing different types of agents that are really good at specific things. So for example, today we have an agent that's really good at analysis of data in your Venna data model. And actually at the end of this month, the end of January, we're going to be releasing our next agent, which sort of what Rishi was talking about is actually, it will generate templates like reports in Venna for you. But we use, with some of the Microsoft Azure AI Studio infrastructure, we have on the quote back end, what's called agent orchestration. And so it's still a single experience to the user. They just ask what they want to get from Venna Copilot, and agent orchestration determines which is the best agent to then route that request to then complete that job for the user and then return the results back to the end user. So I think we'll, from an enterprise, you know, application perspective, I think at least for me, when we talk about ease of use being one of the drivers of consumerization, I think that type of intelligence is really important. Agents are also still the concept of it and how end users interact with it, both consumer and enterprise, I think still very early emerging. So it's hard to say there's trends there. But yeah, agents are certainly the hot topic. I just, you know, even for example, for me, in my own use of Microsoft 365, I've got like 7 agents already there. And, you know, you got to now know which one to use at the right time. And I think that's okay if you really know what you're doing. But at least in how we've been productizing it, we've been very conscious to use that orchestration construct to continue to make the usability, keep the usability bar really high.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thanks for a little bit also a view into the future, what's happening next. And we're at the end of our time. So I think we can take away that consumerization is happening. It creates a few challenges, but a lot of opportunities also. And what would you, to sum this up, what would be your recommendation now for CFOs or finance organizations? Yeah, what should they do to prepare or to basically make use of this trend we just discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had two key things I preach a lot to organizations looking at this stuff. The first is at an organizational level, you have to look at embracing these technologies. The companies that don't are going to fall behind in their respective industries. It might not happen today, but over time it will happen. And it's not something like mobile. You know, the mobile era was the naysayers of mobile. Eventually, when they realized they were wrong, you know, to some extent, you know, you could all of a sudden in a very short period of time, whether that's a quarter or a year, build your mobile strategy. You will not be able to do that with AI. It does take meaningful amounts of time, again, depending on your organization, what industry you're in. But I would say, you know, develop a governance model for how to embrace these types of tools. That, I think, is super important. The answer just no, you cannot use them. I think that's a recipe for being disrupted in your respective industry. So that's one, whether it's an AI committee, a governance plan, whatever it might be. And for CFOs, that's an opportunity to be an industry leader in your respective, in your organization or in your industry. And then the second is at an individual level, there's a Harvard professor that had a great quote, which is a lot of jobs aren't going to be necessarily replaced by AI, but you'll be replaced by somebody who knows how to use AI.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really relevant in a lot of industries. And so, you know, while the bar for ease of use is pretty high with large language models in particular, prompt engineering is an emerging skill set that I think is going to become increasingly important for people to learn, which is effectively almost in a way a new language. The language being, how do you interact with a large language model? And so I that's my other tip would be start getting comfortable with the practice of prompt engineering and how to efficiently interact with a large language model.
Yeah, just to quick thought on that, for anyone that's afraid of a programming language, the good news is the new language is English. Yeah,
that's right.
but Richie, what's your take? What are your recommendations?
Yeah, I always encourage our customers that we work with is be open and get curious. And just have that curiosity around, you know, how does a technology work? What are applications of that technology? Work with a team of passionate people around you in your organization. Start to use what you have today. For example, you know, use Office 365 Copilots, use Teams Copilot to help the productivity of your internal meetings or external meetings. There might be, you know, other business units that have already embraced AI and have a specific enterprise tool that has some AI technology that's helping them. interview with them, speak with them, get to see how they're using it, what are the benefits that they're getting from it. And then you start to, you know, create your strategy on how do you deploy or how do you implement an AI technology. We won't go into the details of that in our time here today, but also I 100% agree with Andrew is to build out your skill set. You don't necessarily, you know, at the end of the day, have to be a data scientist and know how to write, you know, very complex Python algorithms as an example. But I would encourage, you know, people in the Office of Finance, who are listening to this podcast is, you know, go into your Excel model today that you have for forecasting and start to play with. Now, Python is fully embedded within Excel. Can you use, you know, even natural language to create some Python code to take 2 years of historical, project out your next year thing? It doesn't need to be used in practicality, but play with it. Look at that Python code. I 100% agree with Andrew. You're not going to be replaced by AI, but you want to understand the capabilities of AI technology, especially also when you hire new individuals. Now, when you hire someone new in the finance team, is you know the types of questions to ask because you're aware of the capabilities at a good enough level to know the right questions to ask to get the right people onboard your teams as well. So get curious, learn. There's so much content out there. I think that's a great next step for people that are newer to AI technology and to Gen AI.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, with that, you are creating the right culture of embracing AI and data and analytics advancements, which is super important. Richie, Andrew, thanks so much for all your insights, for sharing your knowledge with us here. And I wish you all the best. The market is moving fast, as we just discussed. So I'm really looking forward to see what's coming on next from you and to interact with you soon again. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Carsten.
Bye, Carsten.